I have a theory. Hating someone feels disturbingly similar to being in love with them. I've had a lot of time to compare love and hate, and these are my observations. Love and hate are visceral. Your stomach twists at the thought of that person. The heart in your chest beats heavy and bright, nearly visible through your flesh and clothes. Your appetite and sleep are shredded. Every interaction spikes your blood with a dangerous kind of adrenaline, and you're on the brink of fight or flight. I pulled into the Green Valley Community Center parking lot and scared the crap out of 5 senior citizens. Even though it was Halloween, inducing heart attacks in the geriatric population was not on my agenda. Unfortunately for everyone within earshot, my truck made a ghastly high-pitched whining sound. This happened whenever it idled. It took them a few minutes, but they recognized me. Everyone in Green Valley, Tennessee knew who I was. Nevertheless, I imagine they were not expecting to see Jessica James, the 22-year-old daughter of Sheriff Jeffrey James and sister of Sheriff Deputy Jackson James, dressed in a long white beard, sitting behind the wheel of an ancient Ford Super Duty F-350 XL. In my defense, it wasn't my monster truck. It was my mother's, something she could plaster with bumper stickers that said, "Have you kissed your sheriff today?" and "Don't drink and drive. Alcohol and calculus don't mix." And "Eat steak. The West wasn't won with salad."
Alexandra Mountbatten had common sense. That's what her friends believed. The truth was, Alex had no sense at all. At least, not when it came to charming gentlemen with roguish green eyes. If she possessed any wisp of rationality, she wouldn't have made such a fool of herself with the bookshop rake. Even now, more than half a year later, she could revisit the embarrassing scene and watch it unfolding as though she were attending a play. The setting: Hatchard's Bookshop. The date: a Wednesday afternoon in November. The personages: Alexandra, of course, her 3 closest friends, Nicola Teague, Lady Penelope Campion, and Emma Pembroke, the Duchess of Ashbury. And making his first appearance in a starring role, trumpet fanfare please, the bookshop rake. The scene proceeded thusly.
There was a boy in her room. Kath looked up at the number painted on the door, then down at the room assignment in her hand. Pound Hall, 913. This was definitely room 913, but maybe it wasn't Pound Hall? All these dormitories looked alike, like public housing towers for the elderly. Maybe Cass should try to catch her dad before he brought up the rest of her boxes.
"You must be Cawther,"
the boy said, grinning and holding out his hand. "Kath," she said, feeling a panicky jump in her stomach. She ignored his hand. She was holding a box anyway. What did he expect from her? This was a mistake. This had to be a mistake. She knew that Pound was a co-ed dorm. Is there such a thing as co-ed rooms?
"You derailed my dinner," I seethed.
"Derailed it?" Reese huffed. Anytime Jackson brought up the subject of renewable energy, Fairchild's eyes glazed over. "You should thank me for keeping the guy interested enough to stay through the entire meal."
"Yes, I so enjoyed him constantly grilling you about how much blood you've spilled and how many women you've bedded. That's what I always look for in my dinner conversation."
"Hey, it's not my fault your boss has no manners. The point is, I kept his interest. The guy loves me."
"Ugh, unfortunately true."
"Seems to me if you want this guy to keep you around, then the way to do that is to pay me the $2,000 a week to be your fake boyfriend. He wants me around, and where you go, I go, right?"
I stumbled to a halt, the anger mixing with frustration, because I knew there was logic in his proposal. He was absolutely correct, and I hated it.
We may no longer study or teach rhetoric in anything like the way our ancestors did, but many more of us rely much more heavily on it than ever before. Consider the conditions in which, at the dawn of the 21st century, we live. Our commerce, our politics, our cultural and social lives are all rhetorical to an extraordinary extent. As the collar of the average Western worker made its journey from blue to white over the course of the last century, the value of the persuasive arts for career advancement has grown in proportion.